Hello and welcome to the Forward Press Podcast presented by GolfWeek.com. I'm your host, David Dusek, and in this episode, I'm joined by Beth Ann Nichols, who is also a senior writer with GolfWeek, GolfWeek.com, and USA Today Sports. And we discuss the Diamond Resorts Tournament of Champions, where Jessica Korda shot 60 and then a 66 on Sunday to win in a playoff over Danielle Kang. It was really exciting stuff. And we talk at length about Jessica Korda's game. We talk about Nelly Korda's game. We talk about Danielle Kang and her performance as well. Really good stuff from the LPGA Tour. Then we talk about Lexi Thompson and how she sat 65 on Sunday at the Diamond Resorts Tournament of Champions and what she might be doing to prepare for the Olympics. Number one on her list is getting that putter and getting her putting much more in order. That's been the thing that's obviously been holding her back quite a bit. We also talk about the scheduling for the LPGA Tour and trying to maintain the momentum that they've really sort of established with the 2020 U.S. Women's Open last November at Championstown in Texas. And then Beth Ann, of course, gives me a little bit of look ahead towards 2021 on the LPGA Tour, some of the big storylines that she's going to be watching for and more. So sit back, lay back, and enjoy.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So now I'd like to welcome back for the first time in 2021, my colleague, my friend, senior writer at GolfWeek, GolfWeek.com, and USA Today Sports, Beth Ann Nichols. Beth Ann, this is going to be the latest Happy New Year probably you've received. We're recording this. It's Tuesday, the 26th of January, but Happy New Year. How's it going?
Happy New Year. It's funny. I just texted that to a player yesterday. I was like, well, I haven't talked to her since December. So
when is the cutoff for you? When is the cutoff for you for when you stop the Happy New Year's? I feel awkward after about like the fourth or the fifth, but you're right. Like if you haven't seen somebody, like, when do you stop?
You feel kind of like you've, I don't know, it feels like I'm missing something if I don't, you know, acknowledge that I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while. Holidays are over. I will make a dirty admission here. We strung Christmas holiday lights around our back deck, which was really pretty. We've got a deck on the backyard that if you go to golfweek.com and you see some of my equipment videos, I have used as a sort of a place where I shoot some video. They've got some nice pine trees in the back. It looks golf-ish as much as I can sort of do it from home. And we strung they're still out there. I haven't taken the lights down. We're sort of clinging to one last. It's winter in New England post holidays, which can be depressing. And we've still got the lights out there. you go up on Instagram, or if I go up on Instagram and see you start holiday decorating like pretty much as you're putting away the dishes from Thanksgiving. I think the dishwasher is still going.
Yes.
Tinsel and garland are being strung at the Nichols house. Birdies were being strung together in bunches this last week on the LPGA Tour. Jessica Korda wins overtime, free golf, after shooting 60-66 to win over Danielle Kang. So my question to you is two parts. Number one, surprised that she's able to come out of the gate on the LPGA Tour season so fast, seemingly playing so well. And what's the difference between what we saw? I mean, 60 is a special round, obviously. You're not going to shoot 60. I believe that's what, the fourth or the fifth 60? Fifth 60 that we've seen on the LPGA Tour. What's the difference when she plays like that as opposed to when she shoots 70 or 69?
Well, I mean, it's everything's got to go right that day, right? I mean, she didn't even know what was going on until the 17th hole. I mean, that's just, it all comes down to putting, right? At the end of the day. It was just a spectacular round. I mean, you and the crazy thing is, it's the first one since 2008, Paula Creamer at the Marathon Classic. And you got to think about that. That's a long time for the LPGA not to have a 60, which kind of goes to a broader issue I want to look into down the road on course setup and what's good for the women, you know, and why the women don't have lower scores. So that's another topic, but you love to see it, you know. I mean, of course it's a special thing, but 13 years, is it that special compared to what happens on the PGA Tour? It seems like a regular basis.
Well, let's go there for just a second. So I have a theory. Back in 2010, the USGA and the RNA changed the rules that govern grooves. Now, a lot of people paid attention to that with wedges. And stay with me for just a second as I get kind of nerdy on this. But when you make the grooves in any club, wedges or not, a little less sharp and a little smaller in volume, you can't spin the ball as much. And the thinking was, like, we want to put driving accuracy, not just distance, going back to distance, to be a little bit more of a premium. And if guys can't spin the ball out of the rough or with their wedges as much, they're going to have to think like, well, we need to be straighter off the tee. Well, what does the PGA Tour do? They look at golf as entertainment. People like to see birdies and eagles. So course setup got a little bit easier. The rough at most events isn't quite as nasty as it used to be. If you talk to guys, the hole locations were put in places where oftentimes, yeah, they're tucked pretty good. Certainly for people like us, normal folk, but the proximity to the hole for most guys the next couple of years got better with the duller wedges. And I bring this up and I ask it now to you in terms of LPGA Tour. Should the LPGA Tour be setting up golf courses with a little bit more entertainment and birdie making in mind? Or do you think that they're trying to walk this fine line between that and making sure that the challenge for the best women players in the world is maintained?
I mean, I personally would like to see more birdies. I mean, I think that I feel like oftentimes when there are low scores on the LPGA or in any kind of women's golf, you know, it's been set up too easy. Whereas on the men, it's, wow, these guys are good. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. that is a real stigma. And it's really frustrating. But I also think one thing that's interesting is I heard a lot of players talk about how pure the greens were and how fast they were running last week. And that's a big difference. The men week to week have better conditions. And if you have better greens to putt on, you know, it makes a big difference. And so, you know, I there are so many different factors and elements, you know, that play into this scoring issue. You know, how many reachable par fives are there? You know, what are the women, how many women are hitting irons, mid irons into par fives, you know, on a regular basis compared to the men, you know, mm-hmm. how short are the par threes? You know, there's just a lot that goes into it. But it's something I want to dive into, because especially when you look at NCAA golf, the men and the women playing the same courses back, the same course back to back, you know, we'd like to see more of that, in major championship play, as well as obviously a fantastic hit at Pinehurst. But all of these things are really important, because when women go and play the courses that we've seen, these historic moments that men have had, you know, let's say Olympic, you want the course to play similar for the women than it did for the men.
Just at the appropriate length is basically, so if the guys are playing it, you know, to keep the shot conformancy, basically, like if they're playing it at 72, 73, 7,400 yards to make sure that they're hitting certain clubs into greens, basically what you're saying is like, hey, give the women the same type of clubbing or the same type of challenge. So mid iron for the guys and mid iron for the women, which would be, it might be 30 yards closer, 20 yards closer. I mean, there's differences there. On a week to week basis, is there a problem with, I mean, I'm sure that they putt well. I'm tired almost of hearing every single week the PGA Tour broadcast, like, oh, these greens are so pure, course is in great condition. I take it for granted that the courses, when they're hosting a PGA Tour event, are going to be immaculate. I live very close to TPC River Highlands. I'm able to play that course a lot over the course of the summer. I've played it right after the guys. Yeah, it's really good, like, in terms of like the green speeds and the conformity of the fairways are all nice and everything like that. I'm surprised to hear you say that, like, the women don't week in and week out put on really high quality putting surfaces, and that maybe the condition of the golf course overall isn't what I guess I would have always assumed it to be.
Well, I mean, I think with the fact that whenever a player talks about it, my ears kind of perk up because the emphasis that they put on it, and on how great of a condition a golf course is, the way they say it, it's like, you know, wow,
you know, surprise.
As opposed to what we expect every week, you know,
huh.
And that just comes down to the kind of venues that the men can play on versus the women, just the resources that are available. I mean, it's just different.
So if we had a golf czar in a good way that basically had the men and the women following each other. So, you know, for example, the women shouldn't always follow the men, but the women can be at a tournament and the guys can follow up a week later. It would potentially solve that problem. It could get the women and the men to some different types of venues, mixing up schedules. I'm still holding out hope that we start to get more midst of the season, mixed tournaments with LPGA and PGA Tour players. I think it would be fantastic for both tours. I think in some ways the guys would still remain competitive, but they could relax a little bit. I think it could demonstrate to people who don't know how good the women are that, yeah, they can really, really play. And the old notion that, like, oh, you know, really good players at the amateur level could commit, like, no, you cannot. There's no way. And in watching more women's golf, I am just in awe of what they do with, oftentimes, from what you're saying, either, you know, the course looked great to me this last weekend on a Lake Buena Vista. It looked really, really sharp, and I was impressed. One of the things about Jessica Korda's game that came over to me, and I want to ask you a little bit about this as someone who's seen her a lot more than I have. I grew up playing tennis, and of a comparable age. I know that her father, Petter Korda, just turned 53, I believe, on Friday. I am now 50. I watched him a lot. I covered him when I was working at Tennis Magazine. He was a real methodical player. He was a grinder. He would be somebody that you would see on a draw and be like, whoever he's playing against is about to have a very, very hard day. He might not win every tournament and every match, and he didn't, but it was never for a lack of fitness, and it was never for a lack of toughness. Sometimes he just lacked, like, the big weapon. He didn't have a serve like Pete Sampras. He didn't have a forehand like Andre Agassi, but there was no weakness. It looks like Jessica's game, to me, is very similar. You mentioned, like, the putting comes and gets hot and she ends up with a really low score. For the most part, do you think that her golf game sort of translates? She doesn't hit the ball as far as some of the players off the tee. She looks like she's built around steadiness and around smarts and guile. And I mean that in a really positive way. It doesn't look to me like she's got any major deficiencies in her game. Is that an accurate representation or thought, or am I missing something?
Jessica Korda was the longest player in the field last week, and she was hitting it.
Clearly, I'm not, like, paying nearly as much attention to this. Are you serious?
Yeah, she was consistently past Nelly off the tee by quite a bit.
Okay, but it didn't, like, maybe because, again, like, I wasn't there. Like, I'm watching the broadcast, and yes, she's hitting, you know, last in that group, but how far is she putting it out there?
She's 40 yards ahead of Danielle Kang off the tee.
But Danielle Kang's not a big hitter.
What? Well, no, but that's significant. She was significantly longer than Lexi Thompson, actually, for the week, too. It looked
really?
To the point that I asked her after she finished on Sunday, have you gotten longer in the off season? You know, and she was like, no, this is pretty normal.
And I don't mean this to be in a mean way. Like, she's a strong, athletic woman.
Yes.
I mean, like, she clearly has put in the time on the gym. But
she is. But she's battled injuries throughout her entire career. That's been an issue. And so, you know, she was smoking the ball, and I, you know, but to be fair, we've watched a lot more of Nelly than we have Jess of late. And so I think there was a lot of, wow, for me, there was a, wow, Jessica's pounding the ball. And, you know, this is why I talked to her about it, but it seems like, you know, she hits a lot of three woods off the tee. She said to me, you know, because a lot of longer players,
there's too much bend in the fairway.
A lot. So anyways, she's a powerful player, and It was, well, that was what was the most interesting thing for me about this past week, was that I really haven't been paying that much attention to Jessica Korda. It's all been on Nelly of late. And so it was fun to watch them side by side compete head to head, obviously on a Sunday. That was fantastic. But to also compare their games again, because, you know, I wasn't really even doing that in the Solheim Cup when they were paired together. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really comparing their games. You know, it was more of the head to head competition and them being a team. And I was just looking at it differently. Plus, it's hard to do when you're playing, you know, alternate shots.
Alternate shot is brutal. Yeah.
So, but anyway, so it was an interesting exercise. They hit their irons about the same distance, but Jessica's definitely longer off the tee than Nelly. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how she carries the momentum. She was looking forward to the fact that she had a month off, which you would think, you know, that, you know, she was like, I can actually celebrate and soak this in and, you know, enjoy, which usually are just going on to the next tournament. And so it's an unusual thing to be able to really, you know, celebrate with your family. It's the first time she'd won in front of her parents and really soak it in. So I think for most players, having the second off season was a welcome thing, because the first off season was way too short. You know, the season went right into the holidays. You felt like straight out of the holidays, you had to get back at it. And, you know, I think most of them look, the 25 players who played in this looked at it as a warm-up event. Identify what I really need to work on in my second off season, which is what's coming up.
So, and maybe it's sort of a tease, and you and I sort of talked about this before I hit the record button on this. My feeling is that as someone who's trying to get, obviously, more attuned to the LPGA Tour and the players and trying to follow week to week, I came out of the U.S. Open really, really amped up. And I had players that I was genuinely like, I can't wait to follow and see what happens. I want to see what happens with Amy Olsen. I want to see what happens with Danielle Kang. Like, Danielle Kang fascinates me. I think so many things about her seem to be really, really interesting. The fact that she came out of the COVID break red hot. I went back and started watching some YouTube clips of her U.S. Women's Am wins, one of them over Jessica Korda. I love the way that she plays, and I love her temperament out there. But now that you've gone from all that U.S. Women's Open, which I felt like was a really significant turning point, potentially, we could look back on, I think, the 2020 U.S. Women's Open at Champions is like, that was the event where women's golf stopped being this like niche kind of a following. And like, they were getting a lot more exposure. People were really, really excited about that U.S. Open. And people this weekend were really excited about watching women's golf. And the men's tournament, the Amex, for me personally, lacked juice. Like, I realized that people who are into that stuff and they want to see PGA West in the desert, like, it's cool. Like, okay, fine. I totally get that. This tournament was so much more compelling. The fact that you had long putts being made between star players, you know, playing in a playoff, it was just more compelling. You had a 60 followed by a 66. There's somebody shooting 64 that, you know, Nelly could have, you know, she ran out of holes. If we play another 18, Nelly could easily have won this tournament. Danielle Kang, how many holes was it consecutively without making a bogey? 84, 86?
Getting back to the CME, 84.
Yeah, I mean, that's like ridiculous. That's stupid. So, and now we take a break. We've got 4 weeks off, and I'm like, no, don't stop now.
I know, silly COVID. I know. I mean, it unfortunately, the events in Australia couldn't happen this year. So thus the hole in the calendar. And, you know, you kind of wish, well, I wish this tournament last week could have maybe been pushed, you know, back. But, you know, the celebrities, I'm sure there was a problem with spring training there with all the baseball players in the field, you know, and trying to get all your athletes together for that event. You know, so there are just a lot of moving parts. So instead, you know, there are two tournaments in Florida coming up next. So there's a nice little back-to-back there for players. But I think some players might not come back to the LPGA until the Kia Classic in March.
Says the woman who lives in Florida and basically then gets to drive to said tournaments, doesn't have to jump on a plane or do anything like that. So let me ask you a little bit about Danielle Kang. Obviously, she loses in the playoffs. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that she said afterwards, her expectations for the week were really low. She hadn't been putting in a lot of work. As you noted in your story on golfweek.com, she had a couple scares. I mean, if you get exposed to somebody with COVID, I'd be frightened. It'd certainly be on my mind. So she had to deal with that. She moved, expectations low. Do you buy it? Like, as when an athlete tells you, like, oh, my expectations are low, I'm you know, I obviously would like to have won the playoff, but like, I'm really happy with the performance. Do you buy that?
At the start of the week, yes, I buy that her expectations, you know, because she wasn't able to prepare like she wanted to. She only saw Batarman once, which is very unusual for them. You know, and she didn't put in the work that she thought she would be able to because of those exposures. I buy that on Tuesday. On Sunday, I don't buy that.
Thank you.
I mean, after you're breaking records left and right, you know, through the course of the tournament, and then, you know, it all comes down to, you know, a putt that you could have made to extend the playoff. You know, of course you wanted to win. Why tee it up if you don't want to win, you know? So yeah. I think that was just a something athletes tell themselves to ease the pain, I guess. I don't know, because I mean, you're not there unless you want to win, you know?
That's something that they read in some Tony Covey self-help and like, you know, I'm a good person, damn it, you know, book or instruction thing. Jessica said, and you, I think that you put it in your piece about this, it was that, like, you know, I don't come to golf tournaments anymore just to show up. I'm too old for that now.
Yeah.
I've been on tour for 11 years, which is amazing.
That came up because she's won her first tournament of the year so many times that the question was, you know, what's the secret to winning your first tournament of the season? I believe this was the fourth time she's done it, if memory serves, which is crazy. And she said, well, people say, you know, it's low expectations, but that's when that led into, but I don't show up to a tournament, you know, not expecting to win.
So with Tom Brady, who now makes the Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you think like he's going to be like, oh, you know what? I really wasn't expecting much. This isn't like, you know, what I left at the New England Patriots. We have this tradition of winning. Like we weren't expecting to be able to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. So if we lose, you know, I'm still really, really set. BS. Total BS. If you're in a playoff, if you have gone through 84 holes without making a bogey, if you're hitting, her putter was so good.
Oh my gosh. It was
crazy how like she was getting up and down. She was making putts. She was doing all this stuff. I totally agree. On Tuesday, Wednesday, you tell yourself, yeah, you know what? We're just out here. You know, maybe we'll just like hit a couple shots here and see where I need to go. I've got this layoff coming up. Life is going to be settled. I'm going to take a week off after this, then start putting in the work for the next 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm going to be ready to rock and roll. You start getting into the lead as she had it through the week. Your expectations change. Like, it's human nature. Like, on Friday night, like, okay, you shoot a hot round. Hey, you know what? Kind of loosey-goosey. Everything feels good. 36 holes in, you're a top five, top 10 player in the world. You're expecting from yourself, like, okay, I'm in this. Someone's going to have to beat me. And your whole mindset shifts. I do not buy it. I do not buy it one iota. Maybe the most interesting thing to me, I couldn't believe this happened, that you wrote about this. So after regulation finishes, she calls Butch. She calls Butch before she goes to the first tee or to the next tee of the playoff, and she gets a tip. How the hell that happened?
I know. Danielle's always on the phone. Like, she's on the phone to the tee. She's on the phone. Like, it's funny. Like, when she comes after she wins the tournament, she'll come into the flash area now to do an interview. And she's on the phone. She'll put the phone down. I think they watch her while she does the interview. Like, this is pretty, it's pretty common. But yeah, she talked to, I think she said her mom, her brother, and Butch before she got.
I'm trying to win a tournament. Put the damn phone away. I'm talking to my son. Put your damn phone away.
She said it helped her, you know? She said, because she hit a great shot.
She smoked it in there. She was closer than Jess was, like, on the shot. Do we know what Butch told her? You said in your story that, like, it was a swing thought, and, like, you know what to do, and you gave her a swing thought.
Right, right. I don't know what the swing thought was, though. But
come on, get out there and report a little bit, will you, please? So one of the things that sort of slid under the radar with all of that stuff going on is the aforementioned Lexi Thompson, who I now know is not even in the same area code off the tee as Jess Korda. So she's a dinker in my book. She's dinking them out there now. She shoots 65, though, which is Yeah, that's a lot better than I've ever shot. That's much better than I've ever shot. And said the ball striking was good. Obviously, if you shoot 65, you can't be hitting it all over the heck and back. Missed a lot of putts close. So she took that as a positive, because the thing with her is the putting. I did know. But what was interesting is it sounds like she and her team over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks during this offseason are going to really focus on putting, which might not necessarily be breaking news there. But they went through different putters, different lengths, different grips, different styles, and have let it be known that they're making a pretty big radical change, but they wouldn't tell you what it was.
No, and just, I said, well, a new instructor? He said, well, some people who are in the putter business. So I'm not sure who the people in the putter business are that they're going to consult, mm-hmm. but I like it. I mean, I like the fact that another set of eyes are going to come into play. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think that it's time to get some outside help. without, I don't know how else to put it.
So let me throw out a theory, and I'm going to let you shoot it down, because obviously I know nothing about anything on this podcast. We've already pretty much just we've established that. So who was Lexi Thompson's guest caddy a couple weeks ago?
I do not know.
She had Bryson DeChambeau's caddy on the bag.
Oh, you mean for the U.S. Women's Open, right?
Yes.
Last month.
So Bryson DeChambeau has very close ties with the putter company called SICK, S-I-K. And I'm just connecting dots that are just floating in my ridiculous brain. They are both Cobra Puma athletes. Hmm. They probably have some type of just like tangential relationship. They probably have met each other on several occasions. I have no idea if they're friends or not.
Well, they have an agent.
So now we're connecting. We've got more dots. So Bryson's putter is somewhat unique. Not necessarily in just like the way that it looks, but the face has four different lofts. As you go from the top of the putter to the bottom of the putter, the loft gently changes so that if you're hitting it on the bottom, it has a little bit more loft. And if you're hitting it on the top, it has slightly less. So the best thing to go is to go to SIK's SICK website, and they have this big explainer basically about how this thing works. But essentially, it's designed to help you get more consistent roll regardless of where you strike the ball on the face of the putter. So this is purely just theory, but like there's a lot of interconnectivity on the fringes between Lexi Thompson and Bryson DeChambeau. And if they're looking to make a pretty radical change, maybe that company designs a putter for her, grind in a couple weeks to sort of get a feel for this thing and whatever stroke type, you know, left hand low, traditional, claw, whatever the hell that's going to be. I'm just going to throw that one out there. I'm not going to give you the Vegas money line on it, but
it's definitely where your mind goes, given the amount of synergy between the two camps. I got to think that that's a possibility. They both drive Bentleys too now, by the way.
Don't we all?
Oh yeah, right. So it'll be interesting to see what she comes back with later next month.
So funny story about the Bentley. I was at the Northern Trust at TPC Boston last, I think it was August. That's the tournament it was August, I think. And I was walking with Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy in the final round. It was in the third round. It was on Saturday. And you have to walk from the ninth green and cross a street, which basically just leads to the clubhouse. It's very little used, but you cross the street to get to the 10 tee box. And so because there's no fans, there weren't very many people. There were maybe like six or seven of us, the two players and the caddies. And it was like, oh my gosh, I'm walking with Tiger and Rory on a beautiful Saturday morning. And, you know, you're one of less than a dozen people that's going to see this round live. We're crossing the street and here comes Bryson DeChambeau in a green Bentley like SUV that probably costs more than my house. And one of the guys says, hey, look, that's Bryson DeChambeau. And another guy standing sort of socially distant under his mask said, yeah, he's got plenty of time since he missed the cut to drive that nice car. I was like, oh, oh, smack. It just stuck with me for a little bit. All right. What other things should we be looking for? We've got a break. Mm-hmm. What are going to be the storylines coming into out of the break, I should say? What are some around the LPGA Tour? What are some things that are going to be on your radar that you're going to start to maybe do some reporting on and think about?
Well, I just did a story last week on the rookies because it's really interesting that they're rookies all over again. So it's rookie season part two. So that's an unprecedented thing, which is kind of interesting. So if you had a bad year last year, like, for example, you know, Haley Moore didn't make a lot of cuts, you have an opportunity to use that as a learning experience and give it another go without having really lost anything. And similarly, if you had a great year, you know, you now have some money in your pocket where you're not going out to your first event thinking, you know, I've got to make money. So even though maybe your status didn't improve because unfortunately, unless you won a tournament, your place on the priority list didn't change, but you don't have that tangible pressure of feeling like you need to make a lot of money. If you had a good year last year, like say, for example, and Andrea Lee, who had a great year last year, given what she started the season with her status. So, you know, plus you've got A-Lim Kim. I don't know when she's going to make her debut. She, of course, won the US Women's Open last year and will be a rookie this year on the LPGA. So I'll be interested in that. And four new players from the Symetra Tour coming over. Graduated to join that rookie class. So you leave me know will be a fun one to watch. I'm excited to see what she does this year. She's so close to winning and can be a pretty really big star, I think, on the LPGA and make that Solheim Cup team as well.
So one of the things that you did not mention there, and I'm not holding it against you in the least, is the Olympics. Lexi Thompson has made it clear that one of her number one priority basically this season is getting back into the Olympics, Tokyo in August. And it sounds like from what I was reading in USA Today, the organizing committee is adamant that if, you know, it's at all possible, like the Olympic Games are going to happen. Like that they said is just absolutely going to happen. Hopefully the world's in a much better place as far as the virus and getting everybody vaccinated and stuff like that. Certainly, I think that will be able to happen to most of the athletes and testing, all that kind of stuff. It happens. How much of a priority do you think it is for professional women golfers to get into the Olympic Games? Because I think it's a play. There's a higher priority for the women to get into the Olympics than the guys. I haven't heard very many guys talking about like, oh, my number one thing this year before winning a major is making the Olympic team. It seems like if anything, they see it as one more obligation or one more thing to break up their schedule when they run up for the guys to FedEx Cup. They've just come out of four majors. Their schedule is pretty condensed. It's not huge on their list, but I have a feeling for the women, it's a lot bigger deal.
It is. And I think part of that is historically, when you look at the Olympics, just as a fan, the men and the women are treated the same. They're celebrated the same, right? And so they're put on equal platforms, a gold medal, mm-hmm. from any country for a woman means as much as a gold medal for any country for a man. And so in that regard, that's in every woman's mind, right? That it means something because that's what you grow up watching, where you see women celebrated equally. And so I think that maybe that's part of the internal nature of why the Olympics matter so much to women. And also women don't, money at the end of the day, the women aren't playing for crazy amounts of money like the men are, and so their brains don't think that way. You know, I hate to say that, but that's the truth. You know, I mean, they're looking at the prestige, the honor of playing for their country, and what that means to them, representing a team, you know, especially, you know, if you're on South Korea's team, especially, it means everything, right? I mean, NB Park wins seven major titles and has a certain level of fame in South Korea. She then wins the gold medal and it spikes to another stratosphere, you know? So every South Korean, you know, knew it was going to be a big deal in 2016, but after what happened with NB Park, then, you know, there's no question. It's even bigger than everybody anticipated. You know, for an American, I think if an American woman were to win a gold medal in golf, I hate to say it, probably would get a lot more publicity than any major championship that she won here.
I agree.
And so that plays into it, right?
That's the difference between casual sport fans will follow the Olympics. I mean, everybody, you know, I don't, when we were watching the Beijing Olympics in 2008, I don't watch swimming on TV. I watch a lot of Michael Phelps. You know, and that was the reason why, you know, he gets on the cover of SI with, you know, however many dozens of gold medals. It's like we all get wrapped up into that. Like, you know, the nationalism sort of comes out in a really positive way. And you get exposure to athletes and to sports in mainstream sport, not just, you know, golfers watching golf. It's everybody watching this stuff. And yeah, the Olympics is huge. I think it's one of the things that you mentioned the money, but because golf is not a traditionally thought of as an Olympic sport, we can sometimes within the industry and people who really love it lose sight of how big a deal the Olympics are to sport and the cult and the world, like in general. The Olympics is massive. It's every bit as big as any sport. And to me, it's sort of the brilliance of it is like the rarity of it. There's within an athlete's life cycle or their career cycle, take a golfer. Let's say they have a really nice 20-year career in golf. You're probably going to have the realistic opportunity to play in three or four of them if you're at the peak of your game, the way that they've got it set up now for golf. That's not many. You don't want to squander those opportunities. That's a really, really special thing. The U.S. Women's Open happens, good Lord willing, every year. You know, you may have to reschedule it around a pandemic, but we play the U.S. Women's Open. We're going to play these other tournaments. And now it looks like we're going to get back to a regular schedule in the weeks to come. The Olympics isn't going to happen. You know, we've got Tokyo, which is going to be weird in 21. And then there's a couple more. And I think it's really unfortunate that the guys don't take it nearly as seriously as the women. And you say it makes total sense that the women get it more than the guys do. They just do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether we should see that as like a really good thing for the women or be disappointed in the guys or both. Because it goes both ways.
I mean, and I don't think that the women consciously look at it from the standpoint that, you know, the equality thing. I don't know that they think that way.
Because their brain is already wired properly, though.
Correct. That's how we grew up as women watching it, and we know that most people can't name WNBA stars or, you know, or even the top most sports fans can't name the top three Americans on the LPGA. Let's face it. But they know the top skiers, the top ice skaters, the top, you know, the top track and field athletes. They know those names.
If there's no Olympics, then Lindsey Vonn isn't worth probably $50 million, you know, and is and good for her. Absolutely. Good for her and every other. Good for Michaela Schifrin, who becomes a household name even for people who never put on a pair of skis because she's one of the best to ever do it. And she's going to be a big star, hopefully barring injury for, you know, whatever. You're going to be a big star for years and years and years to come because you always bring it, Beth Ann. I appreciate you coming once more onto the Forward Press. Have a great week.
Thank you. You too.